our final case this morning, 2022-1515, in the matter of disciplinary counsel versus the Honorable Daniel Gall. For everyone here, Justice Bruner is participating remotely today, and in place of Justice Donnelly, we have Judge David Diapolito from the 7th District Court of Appeals. Thank you for joining us this morning. And in place of Justice Stewart, we have Judge Terry Jameson of the 10th District Court of Appeals. Thank you, Judge, for joining us.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Ms. Sansoloni.
Sansoloni. Yes.
Good morning, and please begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please this honorable court, Chief Justice Kennedy, Justices, Monica Sansoloni on behalf of the respondent, the Honorable Daniel Gall, who is with us here today. I respectfully reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Judge Gall took the bench back in 1991 and is currently the longest serving judge on the Cuyahoga County Court of Common Pleas. During his long tenure, Judge Gall has presided over 40,000 cases and tried countless numbers of those, both as jury and bench trials. As you can see from the significant number of character letters submitted on his behalf, Judge Gall is viewed very favorably by those who have practiced in front of him, many of whom who've done so for decades. What is telling about these letters is that they come from prosecutors and criminal defense lawyers, including public defenders, and from civil attorneys on both sides of the V. They also come from people who have worked for him, court reporters, and community members. These letters make clear that Judge Gall is a man of high character. They describe a jurist who is fair, hardworking, diligent, and prompt, truthful, and honest, shows compassion and empathy, a judge who is willing to work with both sides in civil and criminal matters for a just result. He is a judge who is, quote, willing to work with individuals and give them a second chance. Judge Gall is not like many of the judges involved in the disciplinary process. Here, there are absolutely no allegations involving dishonesty or corruption, or even a hint of that
type of conduct.
Yes,
Judge. One of the factors listed a dishonest or selfish motive in
Correct.
The report?
Yes.
So how do you respond to that, then?
That is why I actually wanted to get into his character letters.
Let's get into it.
Justice Fisher. What concerns me, and that is our first objection to the board report, is the finding of a dishonest or selfish motive. I don't think there's any dispute that there is no dishonesty in this case. The question, as Mr. Kanai has asserted in his opposition brief, is that it's Judge Gall's alleged ego, that he needs to aggrandize himself by being a judge, what I used to joke and call robitis. And I think that that is completely incorrect. If you look at the letters and you look at the testimony of the three lawyers that testified in the case, you will see a different jurist. And who is in a better position to know Judge Gall? The lawyers who have practiced in front of him, his court staff, his court reporters for 30 years, to know that this is not a man that acts out of selfish motive here. This is a jurist who is fair to both sides, a man that believes in giving criminal defendants a second chance. He's probably put more criminal defendants on probation in Cuyahoga County than any other judge. That's why the character letters are so important, so you understand who Judge Gall really is and not how he's been portrayed by ODC in these proceedings. I don't believe—
But this is the second time he's here.
It is the second time he's here. But
and in the first case, I read it again this morning,
yes.
Very similar.
It's similar in the sense of what Judge Gall is guilty of, and I hate to use the term guilty of, is that he is emotional. He is a man that's been on this bench in Cuyahoga County for 30 years. He's seen it all. And in the first case, he was concerned about the protection of a vulnerable victim of crime. You've read the case. And did his emotions get the best of him and he called in the press? Yes. But he's a fair individual, he's fair-minded. He recused himself in that case after he knew that. And that's what's happened. And he's admitted to that in these cases, where things he blew it and where he got emotional. But what he isn't is a Hingham High judge. He isn't a racist judge. He isn't any of these things that he has done to aggrandize him to make the application of a dishonest or a selfish motive correct. It's just not applicable. The board took that on their own, sua sponte, to find that aggravating factor. ODC didn't ask for it. It's just not applicable. They rely in passing on the Bachman case. And if you look at the facts
I wasn't involved in the Bachman case, but, you know, one offense, 6 months suspension.
Correct.
But so what do we do here?
We impose a one-year state suspension, as we have asked. I don't believe, as I've put in our objections, the first objection and the second objection, that the two aggravating factors that were found by the board are applicable. And if you read the board report, it seems that they mathematically added those up to get them in a position to recommend an actual suspension to this court. And I think that's why his character letters are so important for this court to read. And also, I think it is important for this court to read the testimony of Gary Levine. Gary Levine is one of these longtime criminal defense lawyers who've practiced in front of the judge for 30 years. One of his cases are one of the counts, the WS counts. And what Gary Levine, which was ignored by the board, said about Judge Gall is that he is engaging and will listen to both sides. He tries to do the right thing for the defendant. And he does not impose a trial tax when a defendant exercises his or her right to a constitutional trial. That's why Gary Levine, who's practiced in front of him for decades, chooses to try some of his criminal matters to the bench when he draws Judge Gall, as opposed to some of the other judges in Cuyahoga County. And that is why, with knowing and understanding the background of his character as a fair jurist, that you should sustain and impose a one-year state suspension.
Again, couldn't we consider some of these letters from counsel as being self-serving to counsel as well? They know they have to come back and appear before this judge, so why should we give them that much weight? I did read some of them. Some of the attorneys, even in their letters, remarked about the shocking statements that he made in court. So why wouldn't we consider those to be self-serving?
I think that's unfair to the lawyers. I think we should respect our fellow practitioners and professionals more
counsel,
than that.
I've practiced in criminal court myself, and to be able to put something in writing about a sitting judge that you might have to appear before, you're going to think about what you say.
I agree with that, but I will tell you, Judge Gall did not ask one of those people to write those letters. He specifically did not want to do that and express that to me because he didn't want to put pressure on anybody to write a letter on his behalf. He did not solicit one of those letters, not one of them. And I know that firsthand because I and my partner, Mr. Lawson, were involved in the process. But back to the Bachman case, since you were involved in it, Justice Fisher.
I wasn't.
Or I maybe ruled on it. But he was Hamilton County, correct? He got off the bench. I mean, this is a different situation. He got off the bench. The person he held in contempt was outside of the courtroom, was not appearing in front of him, unlike Mr. Smiley, who was being arraigned in front of Judge Gall at the time. He used the F word in front of Judge Gall. He called Judge Gall stupid. I mean, I would like to respectfully submit if I used the F word in front of you today or I questioned your intelligence that you would rightfully hold me in contempt. Bachman is a different situation. Previously, this court found that the selfish and dishonest motive should only be applied, again, when there is dishonesty, and I don't think there's any dispute that we don't have that here, or when the jurist personally benefited. Traditionally, personally benefited meant that there was some sort of financial gain. Again, there is no question that that didn't happen here, or that there was a sexual relationship or some other personal benefit. This idea that Judge Gall got something for his ego by holding an individual in contempt for calling him stupid and using the F word, I just think is absolutely incorrect, and that is not the precedent that this court should want to set.
Well, then what about the Parker case?
Well, I was going to get into Campbell and to Parker, Your Honor. Thank you for anticipating where I'm going. I mean, if you look at Judge Campbell's case, where you could argue where Judge Campbell improperly initiated a law enforcement investigation, intimidated a defendant, wrongfully detained a defendant, in fact, summoned the mayor of his town into his courtroom for questioning, this court found is a mitigating factor a lack of selfish or dishonest motive. So should it be here, as with the case of Salerno and Elm. Conduct, again, which is similar to that being alleged against Judge Gall. I think if you read those cases and you compare the conduct, that there should not have been the sua sponte finding by the board of a selfish and dishonest motive. And again, if you read the board report, it seems that they have done that in order to calculate up the aggravating factors in order to justify its recommendation to this court of an actual suspension rather than a stayed suspension.
Well, counsel, he's been here once already and had a stayed suspension, and the character has not changed. So why wouldn't there need to be a more definite discipline this time?
I think if you compare Judge Gall's alleged conduct with that in Parker and in O'Neill and some of these other cases.
No, I'm comparing it to his own character.
Yeah.
Performance in 2010.
I understand that, but normally the way these disciplinary matters work, you know, we compare conduct in different judicial cases to that.
I've read those too, but I'm specifically asking, he's had a state suspension before, and the character that was exhibited in that disciplinary council report is very similar to now. So why would you not need to a different type of discipline to correct the behavior?
As I said at the beginning, Judge Gall has presided over 40,000 cases. Unlike Judge Carr and some of these other cases where the behavior is pervasive. In Judge Carr's case, you know, I think she was referred to as a game show host and treated her staff terribly, the defendants, the lawyers, all in front of hers. This is not pervasive conduct.
She had a mitigating factor of mental health, I believe. There doesn't seem to be a mitigating factor for Judge Gall of mental health.
Are
you alleging there is?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Yes. But the conduct isn't pervasive. If you look at the number over 30-plus years of where he sat on the bench versus some isolated incidents in which he became emotional and admittedly intemperate, it is different. He does not treat the lawyers, his staff. I always like to say the court reporters know best about a judge or a lawyer. They all wrote very kind and nice letters that the man is kind-hearted and fair and a jurist. Is he intemperate? Absolutely. He is intemperate, and he will admit that to you. I see that my time is running into my rebuttal time. Unless there are further questions, I'll serve the rest for my rebuttal.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Kanai.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice. May it please the court.
So can you begin with the issue of the aggravating factor, dishonest and selfish motive, which seems to be really the question here today?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Are you focusing on dishonest, or are you focusing on selfish, or both?
I do believe it would be entirely focused on selfish. And I would like to start this by pointing out that regardless of whether the court rejects the aggravating factor of selfish or dishonest motive, we do believe that the one-year sanction is still an appropriate sanction. But turning specifically to the matter of the selfish or dishonest motive, and like I said, I do believe that this is focused entirely on a selfish motive. There was no finding of dishonesty by the board and really no suggestion of dishonesty by the board. There are two issues that we can look at in determining the selfish motive in this case. And the first is Judge Gall's own almost impulsive desire to protect his reputation, regardless of the effect that that has on the judiciary as a whole. We see this in both counts 1 and 6, that's Carlton Hurd and Anthony Jackson, where after being reversed by the Court of Appeals, Judge Gall criticized publicly the Court of Appeals. Particularly in the first count.
So criticizing the Court of Appeals is selfish?
Yes, Your Honor.
If you define selfish that broadly, aren't you going to encompass just all kinds of behavior? I mean, doesn't almost everything become selfish if you say, well, it's because anything I do that that protects my reputation is selfish, or anything I do that criticizes someone that disagrees with me, that's selfish? I mean, that seems like a stretch.
I do want to be clear. It's not any time or anything. It is the specific facts of this case.
Well, okay, but then you have to say why the specific facts of this case would be different than anyone else, because, I mean, most people would not say criticizing the Court of Appeals is a selfish thing to do.
Certainly. And so in count one of this case, the Carlton Heard matter, Judge Gall unconstitutionally coerced a plea to avoid a trial. Carlton Heard then appealed that decision. After Judge Gall's action was reversed by the Court of Appeals, Carlton Heard was acquitted at trial after serving 2 years of incarceration. Judge Gall then went on a nationally distributed podcast heard by millions of Americans and said, this is not a case about an innocent man being railroaded by the system. This is a case about a defendant manipulating the system of justice and beating a murder rap. But he admitted at the board hearing on this matter.
And that's count what?
About
the podcast. I'm sorry, what paragraph is that?
In the board's recommendation?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't have that with me right now. But I do believe, so it is count one. It would be towards the back end of the board's recommendation.
About the podcast?
Yes. I believe that from the trial transcript, I apologize, I believe this paragraph, it might be paragraph 33 of the board's recommendation, although that actually might be related to the specific tone determined by the appellate court. So I apologize. But
yeah, there's nothing about podcast in there.
Okay. So he was questioned in national media,
is something you're bringing in, or is this something that's part of the report we have in front of
us? This is part of the report that you have in front of us, that he made this statement after being interviewed. So in that particular context, he also admitted at the board hearing that he had no evidence that Carlton Heard had manipulated anything related to his subsequent trial. So essentially, he was making a baseless allegation.
And that's selfish. So defending yourself, if rightly or wrongly, is now selfish. Should we apply that in other cases?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that you should.
So selfish motive now means that if you disagree with criticism, that's selfish.
But this is not criticism.
I guess it would be helpful if you would tie selfish to some kind of dictionary definition of the word selfish.
Certainly, Eric. The dictionary definition of the word selfish is when you are excessively focused on yourself without regard for others. I mean, that's the Merriam-Webster definition. We use that in our brief. And that is clearly what happened in this case. Judge Gall made up a story. He knows that there was no manipulation, but he said that there was manipulation. He made that up in order so that he could say that he did not railroad Carlton Heard. He made that up. He lied. He impugned the integrity of the judicial system to protect his personal reputation as a judge. That is putting himself before the integrity of the entire judicial system just to protect his reputation. He did essentially the same thing in the Anthony Jackson matter. That's count six, where the Court of Appeals reversed him for not doing his job. It directed him to hold a hearing and to issue findings. He essentially disregarded that order. After he was remanded on that case, he was directed to immediately release Anthony Jackson. He didn't do that. He waited 7 days to have another hearing. So he had 7 days from the time that he was reversed by the Court of Appeals. And at that hearing, he was highly critical of the Court of Appeals, accusing the Court of Appeals of essentially making up supposed facts. That was his term, supposed facts. And this type of behavior with a judge who has the time to reflect and holds public hearings to criticize the Court of Appeals, which the board found in this case, that the Court of Appeals was correct. Judge Gall's essential argument when he was criticizing the Court of Appeals was that the Court of Appeals did not take into consideration information that Judge Gall himself did not put on the record. Judge Gall has come before you today saying that he has 40,000 cases under his belt and over 30 years of experience, and yet made an argument at the Board of Professional Conduct that the Court of Appeals should have considered information that he never put on the record. This cuts both ways. You can't, on one hand, say, you should give me the benefit of the doubt because of my experience, but I can be critical of the Court of Appeals even though it is clear and apparent that I made the mistake of not having a hearing, not introducing evidence, and not issuing findings.
But it's not an ethics violation to criticize the Court of Appeals, though. That's...
No, it is not, Your Honor. What we're saying is that it goes to his selfish motive. So that's the only issue that I'm addressing on this argument.
So then what's the line? If you're going to say that's selfish motive, what's the line? So there are seven of us, we write seven opinions, and we disagree with each other, sometimes using strong language. Is that selfish?
No, Your Honor.
Then where's the line?
Well, so in the case, for example, of Carlton Hurd, the line would be the fact that he was essentially lying. He had no evidence of manipulation, which is what he admitted at the board hearing. But he went into national media and said, this is an example of a defendant manipulating the system of justice. There is no evidence for that statement. There is no reasonable argument for that statement. He presented no testimony whatsoever that there was any truth to that statement, but that statement directly suggests that the criminal justice system was simply too weak to prevent manipulation by Carlton Hurd, manipulation which Judge Gall later admitted did not exist. The operative part of that sentence is his statement, this isn't the case of an innocent man being railroaded by the system. He's saying, I didn't do anything wrong. I did not railroad Carlton Hurd. Carlton Hurd manipulated this weak system of justice in Ohio and beat a murder rap. That, I believe, is where we cross the line. When we get into statements that are utterly baseless, probably lies, and those statements are made purely to protect one's reputation, that is an inherently selfish motive, whether that is done by a trial court judge or an appellate court judge or by your honors. You cannot lie to protect your reputation, particularly if the lie is directed at harming the rest of the judiciary. Judge Gall owes a duty of honesty and respect for the judiciary, and that's what he did, that's what he violated in this case. And again, Justice DeWine, I'm not saying that that is a standalone ethics violation. I'm merely saying that that supports the argument that he is engaging in, that he has a selfish motive. His motive is focused on his reputation, and he has done that in multiple instances in this case. Not only is he driven by ego, as this court found back in 2010, but that ego tends to cause him to reject the careful deliberation and evidence that he should bring to every one of his cases.
Well, all those, you know, seem like bad things, but they're not what most people would call selfish. I guess that's what I'm struggling with here. I mean, you...
Oh, I would say, Justice DeWine, I do believe that they are. If you ask someone, do you think that lying to protect your reputation is selfish? I think that most people would say that, yes, if you're lying to protect your reputation, that's an inherently selfish act. I mean, obviously, if you don't agree with that, I doubt there's anything that I could say to convince you of it.
Well, I lying to protect your reputation, I mean, you know, was you really haven't shown, I mean, first of all, I'm not sure that all the things that you say are lies are lies. I mean, demonstrably false. I mean,
in fact,
the first example you gave me, I went and looked in the complaint. It's not there anywhere. So
it is in the trial testimony, Your Honor, and referenced, I do believe, in our objections. But I would happily concede, even if we assume that it's not a lie, even if we call it a slight misrepresentation, the primary motive here is still to protect his reputation. But as I said, Your Honor, even if you reject the selfishness, even if this court doesn't buy that, and Judge Gall's counsel correctly pointed out, we did not even argue that. But even if we reject the selfishness, the case law here still leads to the result that a one-year suspension is an appropriate suspension. We have a judge who has violated two separate lines of precedent from this court, Parker O'Neill and Campbell, which stand for the basic proposition that when a judge commits a broad scope of misconduct, numerous counts, multiple charges, an actual suspension is appropriate. We also have the unlawful incarceration cases from Bachman and Rep, where the court has held that even if the judge commits only a single act of misconduct, if it is egregious and results in unlawful incarceration, it requires an actual suspension. So we have two separate lines of cases, either of which would require an actual suspension, both of which combined in this case should lead to a significant suspension. And tellingly, Judge Gall, throughout this entire proceeding, has not cited a single case where a judge has committed the scope or breadth of misconduct that he has and received a fully stayed suspension, notwithstanding the fact that Judge Gall has previously received a fully stayed suspension from this court for similar misconduct, and now is simply asking this court to give him what is essentially a slightly longer version of a sanction that has already failed to deter him from the conduct that he committed. Moreover, a fully stayed suspension is consistent with all three of the primary principles of judicial discipline that this court has announced, which are protecting the public, ensuring the even-handed administration of justice, and preserving public confidence in the integrity of the judiciary system. Judge Gall has violated all three of those principles in multiple ways in this case. And finally, Your Honor, Judge Gall, perhaps most tellingly, has shown no remorse in this case. He's pointed you to places in the record where he has said, I regret that I did that, or I went too far. But if you read just a little bit further in those places, what he's saying is, I regret the harm to my reputation. I regret that I'm giving the panel, which is what he was saying at the time at the hearing, I regret that I'm giving the panel the impression that I did something wrong. He has not shown any remorse for the days, the months, or the years of unlawful incarceration he's imposed. He's not shown any remorse for how he has belittled and demeaned the people who appeared in front of him. He's not apologized for any of his misconduct. And Judge Gall knows the value of an apology, because in count 7, the Arthur Smiley case, after Judge Gall's contempt order was remanded, Judge Gall reached out to Arthur Smiley's counsel and said, if Arthur Smiley will apologize to me on the record in a motion, I'll dismiss this contempt order. So he understands the value of this, but he has never extended that courtesy to any person involved in these cases. That lack of remorse is one of the greatest indicators that this is a person who is at risk for recidivism. He refuses to accept the discipline of this court. He disregards the orders of the Court of Appeals. He has no remorse for his actions. He has been solely focused on himself during these proceedings, and that alone should be the basis for at least a one-year actual suspension. Unless there are any further questions from the panel, Madam Chief Justice, I would yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Cipollone, you have 2 minutes and 49 seconds.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I want to address a few things that Mr. Kanai brought up. There is no evidence of the podcast in the record, Your Honor. It was mentioned briefly by Mr. Kanai in his response to my objection brief, but otherwise it is not in the record, nor is it in the disciplinary complaint about him talking to the press. More importantly, there's absolutely no evidence in the record that Judge Gall ever lied. The allegations were never made, and it was certainly never found by the board. And in fact, Mr. Kanai conceded when he first came up here that out of selfish and dishonest part of this was that he was focused on selfish, and so suddenly now Judge Gall is also a liar. There's absolutely no support for the fact that Judge Gall is a liar. In fact, Judge Cook, one of the panel members, specifically stated on the record that Judge Gall gave full and free disclosure to the board and cooperated in the proceedings, unlike other judicial officers that you have in front of me. So I'm a bit concerned about the language used by Mr. Kanai relative to Mr. Gall, because it simply is not true. Regarding the acknowledgement of wrongful conduct, I want to point you all the way back to February 14th of 2018, when Judge Gall has been under investigation by ODC for 5 years. In his initial response submitted to ODC at that time, he stated flat out he blew it relative to the sentencing in the Callahan case. I also want to point out regarding the acknowledgement of the wrongful nature of his conduct, he self-reported the Viola matter. So the idea that Judge Gall has never acknowledged the wrongful nature of his conduct is completely incorrect. Again, Judge Cook acknowledged it as a panel member who was sitting there and watched him testify. He answered all of the questions of the panel members and regretted his conduct. He did challenge certain redundant rule violations, and for that, it seems that he is being punished. This aspect is particularly troubling because under the current rules which govern our disciplinary process in Ohio, judicial officers are prohibited from entering into consent agreements, and thus they are left no choice but to try these cases. Yet at the same time, if they challenge any rule violations against them, they are punished additionally by finding of an aggravating factor that they have not acknowledged their conduct. I really want to point out that ODC and Judge Gall agreed before the hearing to 179 paragraphs of all the factual stipulations in this case, stipulated to 83 hearing exhibits. Nothing was disputed, and we only called five witnesses, two by the relator, two by me, the respondent, and Judge Gall. We were able to try an 8-count, 30 alleged violations in a single day. You compare that conduct of Judge Gall to those of Judge O'Neill, I believe had 19 days of hearing and 99 witnesses, to that of Judge Carr, again, who had a hearing over several days and I think went through several sets of counsel. And Judge Gall, in his closing brief, stipulated to 10 rule violations of 5 of the 8 counts. Why, again, disputing redundant counts? It is not true that he has not acknowledged the wrongful nature of his conduct. If you take both of those aggravating factors and you remove them and you look at the applicable case law articulated in our objection to number 4, and you compare it to disciplinary counsel versus Parker, to O'Neill, and to the other cases, I think that a 1-year state suspension is applicable. As this court stated in the Parker case at paragraph 121, respondent's dishonesty requires an actual suspension from the practice of law. We do not have dishonesty on the part of Judge Gall in this case, and that makes a difference.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You'll receive, we'll take the matter under advisement. You'll receive a copy of the decision by the court. Marshall, would you please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.